Counsel, you can approach. Good afternoon.
Good morning.
Good morning. Great. You may proceed. Thank you. Yes. Just for record purposes, this is oral argument in Fraternal Order of Police, S-22-748. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mark Falson, and I'm joined this morning with my co-counsel, Tara Paulson, who is seated at council table. We serve as special assistant attorney generals appointed to represent the appellant state of Nebraska in the present appeal from the Commission of Industrial Relations. I respectfully reserve a minute and a half for my rebuttal. We filed this appeal because the CIR erred when it found that the corrections unit case managers, what we'll call managers for today, are to be included in the protective services bargaining unit as defined by 81-1373. After providing a brief factual overview of this appeal, I'll address three of the bases upon which we have argued and contend the CIR erred. First, the CIR erred when it concluded, with absolutely no analysis, that the managers are not supervisors as defined by Nebraska statute. Second, the CIR erred when it concluded that the managers are institutional security personnel and therefore must be included in the protective services bargaining unit. Finally, the CIR erred when it relied exclusively upon its 2018 order when it concluded that the managers must be included in this particular bargaining unit. Brief factual background. The Nebraska Department of Correctional Services is the state's second largest agency. It employs more than 2,600 employees, 1,400 of whom are currently in the Protective Services Bargaining Unit. It has facilities across the entire state of Nebraska. Prior to July of 2018, the Protective Services Bargaining Unit was represented by the union we'll refer to as NAEP-AFSCME. The collective bargaining agreements between NAEP-AFSCME and the state of Nebraska provided in Appendix A, and those are in the record, a list of those positions which were in the bargaining unit. In that was a position called the Corrections Unit Case Manager with a P code. That position has always been in this bargaining unit. It was bargained for. However, the positions at issue in this case, again, reference the testimony of Aaron Kreiner beginning at page 243 in the Bill of Exceptions, clearly indicates that what we're talking about here is what's called the V code. There have never been any employees in the P code. I've never been assigned to that position, both when NAEP-AFSCME represented them, nor today. It is simply past practice when FOP stepped in that they assumed the bargaining unit as they received it. In 2017, the FOP filed a petition with the CIR seeking to have an election to decertify NAEP-AFSCME and to step in its place. That case found its way before you because that petition was untimely filed. It was sent back, and once you made that decision, they promptly filed a new petition. And in that particular proceeding, again, they asked for a decertification of NAEP-AFSCME and to have an election on the employees, and they were in fact elected. The state was merely a bystander in that particular proceeding. Again,
was the state a party to the action?
It was a party as a necessary party because
did it participate in any way?
Did not participate other than filing an answer, and here's why. As a matter of labor law, the state must be neutral between when employees are choosing between unions. In fact, these very same two parties in a recently reported case of the CIR, in which we were involved for another state agency, had that very fight. NAEP-AFSCME alleged that the state had in fact played favorites with FOP and then brought a claim against us. The state ended up winning on that particular case before the CIR. Again, we must be neutral in those proceedings. We took no role. Again, the FOP's petition that led to the present proceeding makes no mention of this 2018. That sort of came up at hearing, was not mentioned in the statement of issues it presented to the CIR.
But in 2018, that order included the case managers as part of the Protection Services Bargaining Unit.
That is correct, and that's because it came from the collective bargaining agreement that NAEP-AFSCME had already negotiated. It's in the list of positions in Appendix A.
There's no reference to the P or the V code.
Correct.
So what is the utility, if any, of the 2018 matter and
none.
The analysis of this matter?
None. Zero zilch. It's not even in the record. To the extent the CIR, and they rely heavily upon it, it's not in the record. It is pure speculation as to what occurred or didn't occur at the particular hearing. And so that record is not before you to determine what, in fact, was decided in that particular case.
The order is in the record.
The order is in the record, but as far as the proceedings and what the statement of issues, absolutely not.
And, so, and then in your view, in terms of alleged law of the case, your response is?
The 2018 order is irrelevant to the present
okay,
proceeding.
No res judicata, claim preclusion, anything like that.
Zip, zero, zilch. So again, it's simply not in the record
and
before
why
you.
Why not?
Why not? Because, again, the only issue in that particular case was whether there was going to be a decertification election of decertifying NAEP ASPE and whether the new exclusive bargaining representative was going to be the FOP. That was the only issue. The list of positions came from the collective bargaining agreement. It is our position that the record before you clearly establishes that these manager positions are clearly supervisors for purposes of Nebraska law. As this court held in Hamilton County EMS, an employee is a supervisor if he or she engages in just one of the 12 enumerated activities under the statute. Two, they exercise the authority to require some independent judgment. And finally, they hold that authority in the interest of the employee. All of these factors were in fact met. But yet you see no analysis of that in the CIR's order. The three of the factors which weigh most heavily in favor of the state's position in this case are as follows. Responsibility to direct. One example, beginning at page 65 in your Bill of Exceptions, manager Lynn Pozell testifies about a recent incident in which he is supervising, he is counseling, he is coaching one of the caseworkers he manages. An inmate yelled out at another inmate, which is against the rules. He observed that the caseworker did nothing about it. He immediately approached that caseworker, reprimanded them, coached them, and counseled them that you need to be better going forward. That's what these managers do. They manage the caseworker.
So is that a disciplinary duty? What is that duty?
One of the things, it's coaching,
under
it's counseling.
Under the 12 factors, what does that do?
That goes right to responsibility to direct, which is right out of the statute. It also goes to, we would argue, the right to reward or discipline, because these managers have the ability to enter that on a counseling log, which is then considered for purposes of disciplinary action. In addition, hiring, and to effectively recommend such action of hiring, which again is from the statute, they don't have to be the ultimate decision maker, these managers participate on hiring boards in deciding who to hire for these caseworker positions. With respect to that reward and discipline, those managers get to hand out blue cards and A forms recognizing caseworker performance. In fact, Union President Michael Chipman was testified. He was a caseworker when he worked for Department of Correctional Services. In Exhibit 510, Chipman testified that that was his annual performance review. And who performed that? A manager. The manager who supervised him was the one who did his performance review. After Exhibit 510, there are numerous other performance reviews for caseworkers in which their manager conducted their annual performance review, which by the testimony of Aaron Kreiner is one of the factors considered with respect to merit increases and annual increases. So it does potentially impact their compensation. Second, these managers use independent judgment in engaging in those duties. Again, the example I gave with Lynn Pozell, his testimony, no one told him to go counsel that caseworker when they failed to admonish that inmate. He did it because he knew that was one of his responsibilities. Finally, with respect to that, if you look at Exhibit 8, and Exhibit 8 is essentially the job description for that particular position. The manager position. This is the first line supervisor outside of the bargaining unit. It supervises the unit caseworkers. That is their primary duty and responsibility. And they exercise all of these functions on behalf of the state of Nebraska. We are not asking this court to change existing law. We're not asking this court to do anything relative to the Hamilton County decision. We're simply asking for a straightforward application of the law in Howard County to the facts as they exist in this particular case. Again, Hamilton County dealt with a really tiny EMS unit in Aurora, Nebraska, one facility, arguably maybe 10 employees, you have to surmise from the facts. Here we got 2,600 employees and facilities all across the state. We have inmates and various securities issues which simply don't exist in the Hamilton County decision. Second point with my limited time here, again, the CIR erred when it concluded that the managers are institutional security personnel, which is a defined term, and that's what they have to be under the Protected Services Bargaining Unit. As a matter of statutory construction, that particular statute states, Protective Services, which unit is composed of institutional security personnel, including correctional officers, building security guards, and similar classes. It is our position that the record before you demonstrates that these managers do not have anything in common certainly not a community of interest with building security guards or correctional officers.
Would you characterize the CIR's error in this case as an error of fact or law or both?
Both. It's a clear error. Again, one of the statutes requires that the 48.817 requires them to make findings of fact. With respect to our primary argument for them is that these individuals, these managers, are in fact supervisors that cannot be in that unit. They devoted one paragraph at the end with zero analysis. So they didn't apply, they didn't even look at the facts. There was no legal analysis applying Hamilton County. There was no analysis of the facts that were performed. So it's both of law and of fact.
How would you characterize our standard of review in CIR cases with respect to facts? Does the CIR get any deference on factual findings, or is it closer to de novo?
So again, your past precedents suggest that, again, the standard is that the facts as found by the CIR do not support the order, or the order is not supported by a preponderance of the competent evidence on the record considered as a whole. So you get to look at the entire record and decide, does the preponderance of the evidence, in fact, weigh in favor?
Well, that was my question, that fourth prong of the standard of review, sort of on initial read, seems to have a little bit of deference, you know, is there competent evidence, but it also, you know, supported by a preponderance on the record considered as a whole. That feels more de novo. So I'd just be interested in your position on.
I like de novo. Again, it is our position that the order of the CIR should be reversed. The matter should be remanded to the CIR with direction to dismiss the petition of the FOP. Any questions?
Questions?
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Council, I think we went over here just a little bit. Can you give Ms. Johnson-Wild another minute, please? Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Council, Melissa Johnson-Wild, appearing on behalf of the Paternal Order of Police Lodge 88. The order of the Commission of Industrial Relations in this matter was within its powers, was not procured by fraud or was contrary to law, and is supported by a preponderance of evidence in the record.
Well, that just gets you to and Justice Papik's recent inquiries. Yes, do you mind to start there?
Yes, it should be affirmed. So this court held in Hamilton County set forth the standard of review of decision from the Commission of Industrial Relations, and that is the standard.
How would you characterize it? Does the CIR get deference on factual findings or not?
The court, under the Administrative Procedure Act, the court could give deference to the findings of fact and conclusions of law, not conclusions of law, but findings of fact of an administrative agency who was there and heard and observed the witnesses. But here, the standard states that, if the record shows that the finding of the commission is supported by a preponderance of the evidence, then I think that is deferential. So I want to talk a little bit about...
Let me just back up. Are we talking about appeal from a Rule 12 proceeding? Is that a good question?
This is an appeal from a decision of the Commission of Industrial Relations under, I think there were several rules. One was a Rule 6 clarification proceeding. So it's an order of the Commission.
Okay, thank you.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about procedural history. The Commission's order sets out the procedural history, but I want to highlight a few points. Because in 2018, the FOP was certified as the exclusive bargaining agent for the Protective Services Bargaining Unit. And not only were case managers included in the bargaining unit with that order and in the allegations in the petition for election and certification, they had been in the bargaining unit for at least two bargaining cycles for 4 years prior to that 2018 order.
Was that the V code or the P code? Was there a difference?
There was a P code that was listed in the, so we've got Exhibit 4, which is the labor contract from 2015 to 2017. That's on page 72. It has the payment matrix. And then Exhibit 5, pages 74 to 75, the 2017 to 2019 labor contracts had the matrix there for the payment. And it said a P code, but there was no indication and there was no testimony, as the commission found, that that even meant anything to speak of. So the commission was correct when they were looking at this in terms of we've already included them in the bargaining unit, and more importantly, there's a history of them being included in the bargaining unit.
What does this record show about this a V as in Victor prefix? How did that come to be? Or does that matter?
So I think what as the commission found, that this was a decision that was unilateral by the state of Nebraska, and that it was occurring probably during the time that the petition for certification was being addressed by the commission. So it was their time at that point to speak up
Yes. Seems like the CR indicated that he didn't know that there was a P versus a V. Is that?
That's right. It had never been raised
in their order.
Right. The fact was the petition included case managers in the petition. The state effectively denied it by saying that they had insufficient information to confirm or deny whether case managers should be in the unit. And that matter actually was presented to the commission at that time.
And an order was entered and it wasn't appealed.
And it wasn't appealed. That's correct.
Does that have any impact on what we're here for today?
Well, so two things. We argue in our brief that it has a preclusive effect, but what we're really saying is that it has monumental relevance, because it was something that should have been, that could have been raised at the time that the state knew about it in the prior proceeding and did not do so. And I point out that the reason why, the state says that they were merely a bystander in that action, and that's not true. They were a party, and there was a final judgment. And it's not true that they were a bystander. By CIR Rule 6, the FOP was required to list those that would be part of the bargaining unit, as well as the eligibility of those individuals to be in the bargaining unit. It was important because either the individuals that were going to get the ballots for the election if NAEB was decertified and the FOP was certified. So the FOP was required to list those. Rule 6 of the CIR, which you can take judicial notice of under 84-906.05, specifically outlines all of the elements of a petition, including a description that shall indicate the job classifications and geographic locations of employees sought to be included and excluded from the unit.
Before your time expires, are these case unit managers, are they supervisors?
They're not, and the commission did not gloss over that fact. The commission specifically stated that the state failed to prove that case managers exercised any of the 12 enumerated duties found in the statute with the degree of independent judgment required to be considered supervisors under the statute. So they analyzed all of the facts of the case. And they're supported by a preponderance of the evidence, in fact, more than a preponderance of the evidence. The commission specifically found that the job classification in question must be sufficiently supervisory in reality and not just a supervisor on paper.
So there was lots of exhibits that indicated a hierarchy and case managers were above case workers.
There were exhibits, and including Exhibit 8 that said that this is how the state views them. There was some testimony from the classification and compensation manager that this is how the state views them. But the wealth of evidence from the entirety of evidence, including admissions by the witnesses for the state was that there was no independent judgment that was being no independent judgment that was being used by any of these case managers. They were really just directing caseworkers to do what they were already required to do.
What, if any, is the significance or maybe the weight of the designation with the V as in Victor prefix?
Well, there is no weight. I mean, as far as they explained why they designated what the V code meant, mm-hmm. But as far as the decision, the commission was vested with the jurisdiction to make the decision on whether case managers were supervisors under the statute. That was their role.
So your view is this unilateral redesignation doesn't answer the ultimate question as to the performance of these workers?
It indicates what the state may have wanted to consider them as, but it does not answer the ultimate question.
Does it matter, but maybe I don't understand the record, if there's a staffing shortage and that this is the state therefore entitled to reclassify?
Well, they are. Keep in mind that this is in the middle of a. They had already been classified once before, okay, and bargaining had happened on behalf of the case managers up until that point. In fact, case managers at the very time of the 2018 hearing were under exhibits 4 and 5, which showed that they were paid 44 cents less than caseworkers. Okay, so they were already in the unit and were already bargained for, which was their right under the Collective Bargaining Act and very important.
Who has the burden of proof in this case?
So the burden is on, did I answer your question? I apologize.
Yes, I'm trying to get the context for this discussion.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If the state wanted to, something had changed for the supervisors, I'm sorry, for the case managers. funny.
My question went to the context about, quote, redeploying people in a shortage.
Okay. Well, the state has the ability to reclassify and change duties and responsibilities, but they do need to seek clarification from the Commission on Industrial Relations in order to fix that, which is what they didn't do. Instead, they refused to bargain, which caused the Fraternal Order of Police to actually file this petition. Okay, and sorry, the burden of proof. The burden of proof, as Hamilton County is specifically held, is on an employer to determine, to establish that a person has supervisory status under the three-part test. And that was, I mean, it was not only Hamilton County that had been, I think, the federal case law as well. I just want to, there was also a point that was made about that the commission didn't make findings of fact, and I want to just remind you
Have you covered that in your briefs on this matter?
This was not raised. No, this was not raised.
Because I think you're out of time. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. And we'd ask that the decision of the commission be affirmed, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You all are excused. Thank you. The next case on the call is Rose versus American Family Insurance. Madam Bailiff, is that how you read the call? Alrighty. And I understand the Chief Justice is resuming. Is that correct?
He should be recused on this case.
And is the Chief Justice also recused on the last matter of the day in Sailor?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.